Welcome to Marketing Tips for Translators, a podcast with marketing and business tips and strategy specifically for freelance translators and interpreters. I'm your host, Tess Whitty, a longtime freelance translator with an education and professional background in marketing. Tune in to hear tips from my own experience or from other translators and industry experts. This episode is sponsored by TransPDF. If you regularly get translation projects in PDF format, like I do, and need to convert them into editable format or even directly into an XLIF format, I recommend you go check it out. TransPDF converts your PDF into high-quality XLIF files ready for translation with your own tool. Then it uses your translated XLIF to give you a finished PDF with all the layout and style of the original. The system has just been upgraded to handle right-to-left languages, so Arabic, Hebrew, Persian, and Urdu, and will automatically adjust page layout and reading direction. For example, a Spanish magazine page with columns running left to right can become an Arabic page with column running right to left. It also handles scanned PDFs, is available from within MemoQ, MemSource, and OnTram, and it includes a free use of Infix PDF editor for any last-minute changes to your translated PDF. Get your free trial now by visiting transpdf.iceni.com. There are also special offers available for pros.com users. Hello and welcome to another episode of Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you're doing well and that the new year has started well for you. I'm recording this towards the end of 2020, and I just can't wait for it to be over because I know that 2021 will get better. As translators, I wonder, have you ever been asked to translate a website? I know I have many times. For global companies, it's a must to have their website translated to the language of the market that they want to be present on. This means that there's a huge demand for website translation, and it could be an area of specialization for many of you. However, website translations come with a lot of technical considerations that we have to be able to master to do a good job. Since I have personally sometimes just been sent a link to a website asking me for a quote, I wanted to interview an expert in the area of website translations to get more tricks and tips on what to do and tools, etc. This lady and colleague of mine was also interviewed in episode 121 when she talked about mobile apps. And today I am happy to welcome back Dorota Pavlak, which is a translator specializing in website and mobile localization. And she also has a degree in multilingual computing and localization. Welcome back to the podcast, Dorota.
How are you? Hello. Yeah, hello. Thank you. Thank you for having me again.
It's good to have you. How are you?
I'm fine. Yes, I'm fine. And you?
I'm good. Good. Now, I know we interviewed you before, but tell us a bit about yourself and your career in the translation and localization industry.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So as you mentioned, I'm a translator specialized in localization. Mm-hmm. I also help other freelancers to start and grow their businesses. And I do it, for example, via my blog, courses, or books. And my career in the translation industry, so it all started when I was a student at the University of Vienna in Austria. Mm-hmm. Well, I was studying translation. And in my final year, I started collaborating with some translation agencies just to gain some experience. And once I graduated, I moved to another country, and then I opened my business as a translator. And then the real adventure started. So, well, I didn't know much about marketing or running a business. I just wanted to translate. I thought I'm good at it. And yeah, I was passionate about translating and writing. And I didn't want to work for someone else. I wanted to be independent. So, yes, I started learning about marketing, about all the business aspects. I followed a lot of courses, read tons of books, and then did another master in localization, as you mentioned. So, yeah, that's how it all started. Long time ago. It was about 10 years ago.
And you are Polish.
Yes, correct.
And but you studied in Vienna.
I studied first in Poland, in Poznań. I did my BA there and then MA in Vienna and then another Master of Science in Limerick in Ireland.
Ireland?
Yes.
But you live in Holland?
Yes. I live in the Netherlands, in Amsterdam. So, yes, I moved here once I graduated from the University of Vienna. So I moved from Poland to Austria, then from Austria to the Netherlands. And then I did 1 year of master in I. That was distance learning. I only had to go there for about 2 weeks. All the courses were online, so I didn't have to spend 1 year in Ireland. I studied in the Netherlands, and I went over there for exams, yes.
Okay. So did you study translation first or localization? I mean, it's kind of the same thing, but you have a technical degree too.
So back then, there were no localization courses. So when I started studying, 12, 13, 15 years ago, there was only translation courses. So I did applied linguistics, then technical translation. And then when I saw that, there is a localization faculty in Ireland, so off I went. Once I've noticed that there's new studies in that field, I picked it up. So there was no localization at universities when I started.
Now, I have localized a lot of websites myself, but I'm usually sent the strings in a localization tool through a localization company. But if we are independent, it's another story, and that's what I wanted to talk about today. But first of all, how many websites have you localized, and what is your process?
So I don't really keep track of how many websites or apps I localize. It was quite a lot. So some projects, it was just a partial localization. Sometimes it's just a localization of an updated website. And some projects were through direct customers, some were through agencies. So I don't really know how many websites I localized, but it was quite a lot. And about
That's
my process.
Question. Yeah. I don't know either.
Yes. So, well, about the process. So if it's a direct customer, first I try to discuss the client's requirements. So I ask them, what's their goal? Why do they want to localize their website? So we look at the source files or at the original website and try to find out, we try to analyze all the items and try to find out if the layout or the content would resonate with the target users. So with the Polish users in that case. Sometimes you have to add some extra content. Sometimes you have to remove it because not everything is relevant for everyone. Maybe you need to add some extra items or pieces of information to make the website more local. So once we know that, then we can optimize the content before we actually localize it. And then the next step is to agree on the budget and timeline. And if the website is quite simple, which means I don't need to collaborate with graphic designers or engineers to adapt it to the target market, then I can move on to the localization phase. And sometimes I would collaborate with a graphic designer or a website developer if the client requires it, if they have some more complicated expectations or if their website is quite complex. But we would always discuss it before the project begins to include it in the budget and in the timeline. In most cases, I would only team up with a proofreader or a reviewer. Again, if the client's budget allows for that. Then once the content is localized, I would make sure it looks good. So I would test it. And when the localized version doesn't have any functional or linguistic issues, then I would send the files to the customer And if they have no remarks and no requests for corrections, then the project is completed. But sometimes they ask to change some little items or to make the text shorter so that we still implement some changes. So yeah, that would be my process in a nutshell.
Okay. So do you charge for the whole process, like when you also just look at the files and analyze everything? And
That's the part of my quote for the project. Yeah. Yeah. So otherwise, you can't really localize correctly if you don't analyze the source files. Yeah.
So if like it happened for me now that a person just sent me a link to their website, how would you go? What tools would you use, and how would you go about it? If you would get just a link to a quite big website, mm-hmm. what would you do?
Yes, so I think that's a never-ending struggle for most translators. And that's the question I hear quite a lot. So, I would always insist that the customer sends me the source files. That's the easiest way to work on a website localization project.
And but source files are HTML files?
For example, yes. I mean, that's the best way to work. Mm-hmm. But if that's not possible for some reason, you have a few options. You could simply copy-paste the text and then translate it, but it's very time-consuming, it's laborious, you may skip some text, mm-hmm. and you won't really localize the website, you would just translate the text. So it's not the best option. You could, for example, open every page of your website in a browser and then save it as HTML. So you can do it with the menu that opens when you right-click on the page. So that could work for some simple websites. What else? You can.
If they had for 300 pages?
Yes. Yes. So of course, you can, for example, use a tool, a website copier tool, such as HD Tracker or Website Downloader. So these tools download all the files of the website, so that you could view the website offline. So that means they will also download the files, the translatable files. But then sometimes it won't work correctly, depending on the website architecture. Mm-hmm. And even if it works, you still have to sift through all the files to search for the translatable files. So there's one more approach. There's one more thing you can do. Well, two more things you can do. So if your customer uses content management system, like WordPress, for example, mm-hmm. you can ask for login data and then use a plugin. So WordPress has a translation plugin. Shopify has a translation plugin as well. Mm. So then you could use the plugin to translate, localize the website in this way. It's not always really convenient, especially if you are used to working in localization tools. It might come with some learning curve. Mm-hmm. And many customers don't have a website based on WordPress or other content management systems. So another thing, another approach, you could simply ask your customer for the FTP access to their website. Mm-hmm. And then you could export all the raw files, so the source files, and then localize the files that have to be localized in a localization tool, and then upload it back to the FTP. Implement your localized files in the correct way. Again, this will work good for simple websites. It could be problematic if the website is very complex, like if there are some elements that are triggered with JavaScript and there's some text hidden. In most cases, that would be the best scenario. But again, some customers are not really happy to give you all the login data to their systems.
So, no, and if I just get the link and I need to give a quote, I can't do that.
No.
Quote. So how would I quote then?
Yes, so I would...
Without going through hours and hours of work.
Yes, if the website is very simple, I would try to save every page with the browser. So you right-click, mm-hmm. you save the file as HTML. Mm-hmm. If it's a huge, complicated website, I would try with the website copier tool. Mm-hmm. If one doesn't work, then you try with another one until you... can finally download all the files, all the translatable files, and then upload them to your localization tool to assess the word count.
Okay. And then after I get the word count, I would provide a quote based on that, plus add in time to really analyze and test and everything.
Yes.
Yeah. What about tools, localization tools? Do you have any favorites?
Well, I have some favorites, but I think there are so many tools in the market, and I can't really say that you should use this or that tool and forget about some other tools. Mm-hmm. I really believe that every translator or localizer has different preferences and different requirements. And also, we have different clients with different requirements. So that's why one specific tool may not cover all these needs. So I would suggest if you want to localize website, the best approach is to have, well, it's good to use at least one mainstream tool, mm-hmm. and then add two or three or four online tools, because you never know what challenge you will have to face with your next localization project. So for example, I currently use about 7 or 8 tools depending on the project and the mm-hmm. customer. Well, of course, I have my preferences, and I don't use all of these tools every day. Mm. You could localize websites with MemoQ or Trados, or you could use Pasolo or mm-hmm. online tools such as Crowdin or SmartCat, Transifex, Localize. So there are really many tools. As long as the tool of your choice supports the file formats that you usually work with and has a friendly user interface, and all the features that would help you deliver great localization results, then it's really up to you to decide which tool is the best. Of course, it will be the best per se. It will be the best for you. So I can only recommend to go explore all the options and choose what really works for you and your customers.
Okay. All right. But localizing a website isn't like localizing marketing material or manuals or something. There are a lot of technical aspects to pay attention to. And what are the most important ones that we need to consider when we localize a website?
Mm-hmm. So I think, first of all, you need to know how to process the source files. So, for example, HTML files or HTML files with some embedded code, because it's not just HTML. It could be some other programming languages embedded in the HTML as well. Mm-hmm. So it's also handy to distinguish between translatable and non-translatable content, especially if you work with direct customers and you have to process and prepare all the files. Or how to extract files for translation when you have all the folders of the website. So you have to know how to go about it. Or how to replicate the original website structure and then create a localized version. So it's handy to know some programming languages, at least to have a passive knowledge of HTML. Of mm-hmm. course, you need to know how to work with localization tools. So I think that would be the most important technical skills.
Okay, but those were a lot. So if somebody is just a translator and want to specialize in software localization, where should they start?
You can start from online courses. Well, I have some, for example. Mm-hmm. There are many blog articles on website localization in general. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of good books on localization, so you can start from there. Plus, follow localization hashtag on social media. You can find many useful information on Twitter or links to articles. But I guess starting from books and online courses would be the best approach.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But there's also not just technical aspects. And for technical aspects, I can say you have to know what tags are and not are, and which ones do you have to be able to maintain and not, and character limitations for buttons and stuff. But there's also a lot of cultural and linguistic aspects that are important. Can you talk about them?
Mm-hmm. Yes, of course. So for cultural aspects, I think the most important is to know how you can reflect the culture in the website design. So for example, what items you can use on the website to engage with the specific audience. For example, there are cultures that are characterized as high-risk avoidance cultures. So that means they need more information, or they need clear signs that they can trust your website. For example, then you can show your quality awards or add some convincing statistics, or add some information about your local presence. For example, you can mention how many local stores you have in the specific country. Or you can add more information about your privacy policy or secure transactions. So you have to add some extra items to your website to reduce that uncertainty, which is very characteristic for some cultures. It's also related to pictures. So there are cultures that are very collectivist cultures. Mm-hmm. And then you could replace pictures on the original website with pictures that present groups of people, for example. And when you localize into an individualistic culture, like US, for example, then you would add more pictures or individuals or very small groups, well, depending on the project and the website. And there is also differences in how you can promote your project. So some cultures prefer a so-called hard sell approach, and other prefer soft sell approach. Mm-hmm. So you have to know how the culture can be represented in the website, like in the website layout, in the website content, in the way your users navigate the website, to make it all look very local and very user friendly.
Do you think a lot of companies with websites are aware of this, that these things can change?
Not many.
Yeah.
So I actually analyzed some websites, and this is also what I teach. I also teach website localization at the university in Antwerp. So this is one of the topic we cover. There are not many websites that are aware of that. So they just not many businesses that are aware of that. They simply think that it's enough to translate the text or localize colors or, currency or measurements, but they forget that actually sometimes they have to redesign the whole website, or maybe add extra items or remove some items. They forget that what really matters is how your target users think, navigate, or buy products. It's not just about the text or the images. It's about the whole user experience. But as I said, not many businesses are aware of that. There are some great examples of websites where you can compare different language versions, different regional versions, to see that they really did the proper market research and that they know the culture very well. One good example of such a website is IKEA. So you can really see that they know the culture of each specific regions. But in general, most businesses only think about the very superficial level. So language, colors, images, data or number format, and that's it.
I have to go look at IKEA.
Yes.
I wonder if H&M is the same. They're both Swedish companies.
Yes.
They have international sites.
I don't know about H&M. I just know about IKEA. That's what I analyzed for the course that I teach. So
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have a look at it.
So what about dive even deeper in examples here? If you get a US website that wants to localize to the Polish market, can you give some examples then what you would consult? Because I think that we have to consult them with the client then and explain, teach them that what needs to be changed. Otherwise, they won't probably be very happy or if they don't understand. What items do you think would need to change then?
Mm-hmm. So the main difference is about how the US and Polish customers communicate, or how the businesses communicate. So US is a more direct communication.
Yeah.
And they use this hard sell approach when it comes to selling or marketing. Everything is very direct and explicit. And for the Polish market, I would try to soften it a little bit, maybe use a less direct language. I also get the feeling that some US websites are very, they focus a lot on that consumptionism approach. So it's like buy now, here, login, use the credit card, use our app to order the product. So it's all about, it's very aggressive to me as a Polish customer. So I would try to soften it. I think it's also quite handy to add some information about the local presence of the business. So, for example, what they did on the Polish market, if they have any headquarters in Poland, or if they organized any events, or I would simply try to highlight their connection with the Polish market, with the Polish maybe culture or tradition. So, try to add some local content. Then another example will be pictures. Maybe, not always, but in some cases you can modify the picture slightly, especially when the original website presents a lot of typical landmarks from the US, like high buildings, or I don't know, the bridge in San Francisco or whatever. So then I would try to replace it with some landmarks from Poland, obviously. So I think that the main work here would be to soften the approach, to make the communication less direct, and maybe look at the pictures.
And when you consult a client about these changes, do you do that over the phone or in a brief, or how do you do it?
It depends how many changes should be implemented. So if it's just several changes, I could just type it in an email or in a PDF file and send it as suggestions to improve the whole localization project. But if there's a lot of things that have to be discussed, and that would be over a call, and we would go through all or the most important changes or suggestions for changes.
Now, website localization is involves a lot of people usually. Where does the freelance translator fit in this whole project?
So usually when you localize a website, people contact you as a freelancer only when the website is already published or just before it's but just before it will be published, but sometimes it's too late. I think it's always a good idea to involve translators earlier in the localization process, even in the development process. So in that way you can consult with the translator and you can be more aware of any linguistical cultural issues, or you can prepare content that will be more competitive. What else?
Well, I know that sometimes when I have, even if I'm working for a localization company, I know that I have been involved in, usually the English side is done and I get to localize it, but then I also get involved in the testing, in the linguistic testing. And
yes, so yeah, that's the most common scenario. So usually a translator would be asked to translate or localize and then to run the tests as well. But I think sometimes it's a good idea to involve the translator earlier just to make sure there's, for example, enough space for text in another language, or to make sure everything is stored correctly so that no strings are stored separately, like half of the string in one page and another somewhere else, and then you don't know what's the context. So I guess it's always handy to work with someone who has a different perspective to prepare your files for localization and avoid serious challenges.
Now, if I'm the only person localizing, or they've contacted a freelancer, it's not through a localization company, how would I go about doing the testing then? Or if you are doing it, what tools do you use to test the websites after you've localized it?
So in most cases, it's just a linguistic or cosmetic test. So you would just look at the website, you would read the text, you would check the content, you would check the layout, and then log any mistakes in a simple Excel file. You could do that, like
with screenshots.
Yes, with
screenshots. That's what I've done a lot.
Yes, or even in a Word document. I had a customer once who asked me to log all the changes or the mistakes in a simple Word document and provide a screenshot. Of course, you have to describe where the bug is, on which page, and how to change it. So you have to be very, very detailed. So it takes a lot of time. So I guess that's the most common approach. There are tools that you can use for functional testing, but in most cases, for website localization, the customers would just ask you to check how the website looks like, and they would probably carry out the functional tests on their side.
Okay. Now, if I want to specialize in website localization, what skills should I develop?
So as we mentioned earlier, you need a mix of technical, cultural, and linguistic skills. But I would also add to it good communication. So website localization is usually a teamwork. So in some cases, you can't do everything by yourself. So you need good communication skills. You also need good planning skills if you work on a very complex project. So you have to be able to schedule all the parts of the project, or you have to find out who are the people you need to contact or work with. And you'll have to be ready to never stop learning, because it's a field that changes very dynamically. So there are many new developments in the localization industry, so you have to keep up to date with it.
Now, you have technical skills, and you've studied the technical part too. But if I am a linguist and I've studied linguistics, I'm just playing the devil's advocate. can anybody become an expert on website localization, or what kind of technical skills should I get?
So I think you could start from learning a programming language, very basic skills. You don't have to be able to create a website, but just to understand how it works. Another thing that's important is you can maybe learn how to use content management systems such as WordPress or Drupal or Joomla, how to create a website in WordPress. And then once you localize a website based on WordPress, you will know how to proceed. So I guess you could start from some online courses on programming languages, and you can try to make some simple websites based on templates. That will help you understand a little bit how the website work. And you have to be able to process the source files, so you can just use sample files from a website that you can download, or just save a page, a few pages from with the browser, and then use it in the CAT tool to see what happens, how to process such a file, and how to export the files. So you can just play around with the files that are out there, easily available, and do some online courses on programming languages, for example. That's a good place to start.
Okay. Now, we've already talked about that it is a complex process, and especially for many languages and bigger companies, they usually require a large LSP or language service provider to do the process. But for individual freelance translators, can we individual freelance translators really get website localization jobs directly? And if so, where do we look for the clients?
So yes, of course we can find localization clients directly, but it won't be the big companies, probably companies that localize in 30 or 40 languages. But in most cases, it'll be small business owners that only need two or three languages, and then they would contact two or three freelancers to cover all these languages. So I guess if you want to find such customers, first you have to start from a market research. So you have to find out who is your ideal customer, what kind of business is it, and where to find them. So you have to find out where they hang out, online and offline. Well, now with the pandemic, probably only online. Before you could just go to the industry events and where your target clients are and simply, learn something new, but also try to engage with them. Another approach is to, for example, read magazines or use platforms that your potential customers read and use. So could be some business websites and with news, with articles, with blogs, and then you can ask to have your article published there, article on localization, for example. And in this way, you can prove your expertise and then your dream client may find you. You simply have to know your ideal customer. So probably that would be a small business owner or medium business that wants to expand to your country. And then you need to be where your clients are, online or offline, social media, industry, newspapers, magazines, events.
And you are also working into a smaller language, or how should I say it? Well, I'd say smaller, but Polish and Swedish are considered smaller languages. So can you give examples from your situation on how you went about?
About finding website localization clients?
Directly, yeah.
Well, I live in the Netherlands, so I started from researching companies that might be interesting into expanding into Poland, or companies who already do business with Poland, but their website is not available in Polish yet, or it is in Polish, but it's a very bad quality.
And do you know Dutch? I mean, do you localize from Dutch to Polish?
I know Dutch, but I feel more convenient when I localize from English or German. And most businesses in the Netherlands use English on their websites anyway.
Okay.
I can localize from Dutch, but I prefer to do it from English or German.
But you started in Holland. You didn't start in Poland to look.
No. I would start from the country that can have my source language. So German, English, or maybe Dutch. So I would start my research. I started my research here with the Dutch companies. So if I found that they have a website which has some Polish but a very bad quality, then I would contact them and tell them, well, I see you want to target your Polish customers, but can I suggest you to do it in a better way because you have this and this mistake on mistake on your website. So that's one approach. And another approach is to, I would just try to connect with them on LinkedIn or try to see what events they are attending, and then try to be at these events as well and try to connect with them. Of course, you want to get a customer after the first meetup or just from connecting. You need to follow up, you need to engage. It takes a lot of time. But I would simply start from building my network and making sure my potential customers are in my network. And then once they see that I might have the expertise that they are looking for, just makes the whole process easier. So everything starts from market research. And you simply have to know what is it that your customer is looking for. And you really have to be sure that they want to expand into your country. Then the whole communication is easier. And
So actually, these are just standard marketing research strategies.
Yes, nothing new.
nothing new. But I'm curious to know, how do you know that they want to expand to Poland?
For example, you can check their social media, their Twitter or their LinkedIn. Sometimes they announce a new collaboration and it happens that their new partner is from Poland. Or you can notice that they go to the trade fairs, which are in Poland. So this is an important sign that they might need some more content in your target language.
Trade fairs are always good that way.
Yes.
So, okay. That's very good. Thank you so much for all that wisdom and for giving us examples for your situation, and especially for smaller language combinations. Now, a question that I always ask everyone on the podcast, you might remember it from before and it might have changed since last time. What marketing strategy works really well for you right now in your business?
So what really works for me, well, it's still social media, but now, well, before I used to be active mainly on Facebook and Twitter, and now it's changed to Instagram and LinkedIn. So that's where I engage with my potential customers or simply share some useful content and comment or discuss on different topics. My blog still helps to drive some traffic and to generate some interest. But what's new for me, so I started collaborating with other freelancers or small business owners or writers or journalists and share my expertise. So if they ask for opinions to write their articles or blogs, I would contribute, and then they add my opinion, but they also add links to my website or my blog. It's simply by contributing to other people's work. It's an effective marketing strategy for me right now.
And you would write about localization then, website localization?
About website localization, about business, about running a freelance business as well. So it depends what they're looking for and if I can contribute in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Now, where can we find out more about you? And tell us about your book also.
So you can find more about me at my website, which is my name, surname, so dorotapawlak.eu. I'm also on Instagram as Dorota Writes, as from writing, or LinkedIn. That's where you can find me. About my book, yes, I've just published my first book. It's for freelance women who want to combine running their freelance business with motherhood. So I interviewed 15 women from around the world about combining their freelance career with motherhood. And then I also shared my tips or strategies on how to survive your first year as a mother who also runs her business. So I think that's a topic, that's something I wanted to know more before I became a mother, but I couldn't find enough resources. So there were no books, at least I couldn't find any. So then I thought, if I survive the first year, I will write such a book, and I will also interview other women to see what perspective they have and what struggles or challenges they had and what they did to overcome.
And we will link to this book. What is it called?
It's called You've Got This, How to Continue Your Freelance Career When You Become a Mother.
That's probably a great resource. I have interviewed people about motherhood and freelancing on the podcast before, but this will also be a great resource. So
thank you
so much, Dorota.
You're welcome. Thank you
for your localization with wisdom. And I know that website localization can be a very lucrative area of specialization for technically savvy translators. And I really appreciate the tips you gave us today, Dorota. The demand for website localization will not diminish anytime soon in the near future. And the more we can learn about it and the tools involved, the stronger of a position we can have on the website localization market. It's so much more than just a plain translation, which you told us about today and which we need to educate our clients about. It involves formatting, usability, consideration of particular cultural likes and dislikes, etc. So thank you also to the listeners. Both Dorota and I would love to hear what you found valuable in this episode and what questions you have about website localization. You can ask the questions in the show notes at marketingtipsfortranslators.com and this episode. So go to /podcast, and from there you can either see this episode first. I don't know what number it will be yet, or you can use the search bar to find it. And I will send, if you are a subscriber, I will, of course, send the episode to you in an email. So thank you for listening. And if you like this episode, please take a moment to leave a review on iTunes if you're an Apple fan, or any of the other podcast listening devices that still accept reviews. I will link to a short video explaining how to do so in the show notes and a link on directly to it, because a review tells me and the other listeners and the podcast apps that this podcast is useful. Thank you so much in advance. Have a great week, everyone, and I will see you in the next episode. Thank you for listening to Marketing Tips for Translators. I hope you found some good tips to apply to your freelance career. If you did, a great way to show this is by leaving a review on your favorite podcast listening app or to share the episode with other colleagues. Do you have a topic, question, or a guest you would like to hear about here? Send me an email to podcast@marketingtipsfortranslators.com.